For Illinois Public Radio, I'm Nyla Boodoo. We have an hour before Governor Bruce Rauner presents his 2017 budget. But here's the question. How's he going to do that when we don't have a 2016 budget? We know you have questions.
The question is, what do you expect us to do? What is it going to take?
Who's gaining what from this particular dilemma?
Who's going to bend so that we can move forward?
All this hour, we'll be answering those questions and more. Plus, we'll have a preview of the governor's plans and priorities. Join us. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. You can tweet your questions. Use the hashtag AskIPR. It's an Illinois Public Radio special ahead of the governor's budget address. Stay tuned. But first, the news.
How much is the state currently spending?
I don't understand who is gaining what from this particular dilemma.
How much revenue is the state currently taking in?
Who's going to bend so that we can move forward?
And what's the difference between saying we're spending X billion dollars and taking in Y billion dollars and saying we have a budget?
You're listening to Illinois Public Radio. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's Budget Day in Springfield. In an hour, Governor Bruce Rauner presents his 2017 budget. But we're in uncharted territory here because, as we all know, we don't have a 2016 budget. There's so many questions about this budget impasse. What's being funded? What isn't? Who's being affected by this? As taxpayers, what do you want to know about this situation? For those of you listening right now, I'm imagining you have questions too. What do you want to know about the budget or lack of one? You can give us a call at 1-800-222-9455 or tweet your questions. Use the hashtag AskIPR. I can think of no better person to kick off this conversation than Amanda Vinicky, our IPR State House Bureau Chief, who's joining us from the Capitol in Springfield. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you so much, Nyla.
Amanda, for the past week or so, we've been asking people on Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit what kind of questions they had about the budget. And we condensed a few, but the number one question people had is, if Democrats have a supermajority in the Illinois legislature, why can't they just pass a budget?
Well, there are a couple of reasons there. First of which is that not all Democrats at least campaigned on that as their answer. So you have some that are in those tough targeted districts that made promises to voters that they weren't going to increase taxes. And they're, of course, looking to win re-election in many of those districts. And so they might not be on board. You've long heard Democrats say that this needs to be a bipartisan deal, and that is for a lot of really political reasons, but also they say that there needs to be buy-in from both sides. And you even have Governor Bruce Rauner himself saying that new revenue is needed, that he's willing to go there. So Democrats are kind of saying, you know, why should we do this political suicide all by ourselves? Walk this with us, hold hands, and let's cross that bridge, come to something we can both agree on. And another key reason is that although they have numerical supermajorities, particularly in the House, that is not quite the case. There are just that bare minimum of the 71 Democrats that would be needed to override a governor's veto should Democrats alone, you know, send a tax increase his way and the Republican governor says no. And you've seen some splintering there. Particularly, we've given a lot of attention on newscasts lately to one Democrat from Chicago, Ken Duncan, who's broken ranks with his party over votes on, say, childcare and union bill.
And we saw that yesterday, right, Amanda?
Exactly. Yeah.
There were several votes that he broke on yesterday. And actually, it wasn't necessarily a clean party line vote yesterday.
Right. And so it's Ken Duncan gets a lot of the attention because he's kind of made a ruckus about this. But there are a couple of other Democrats that really say that they're not willing to do that, that they don't believe Illinois has made all of the cuts that it needs to yet. So that, in short, is the answer. It's not an easy one. It is one that is mostly, as I said, political and really human in nature.
As we go over the basics of the budget here with Amanda Vinicky, IPR State House Bureau Chief. Amanda, one of the questions that I heard from people also as we have been talking to people this week about what they wanted to know about the budget is what Governor Rauner has proposed with his turnaround agenda, because we've heard that phrase so much. But one of the questions we got was, what are the actual changes that the governor is requiring with respect to public employee unions as a condition to this budget? People say they hear things like limits on collective bargaining, but they feel like that's kind of vague. What more details can you add to that?
Well, so the turnaround agenda is not just having to do with unions and labor. But if you do talk to advocates that are leaders of unions, they say it seems as if at every turn there is some sort of element tucked into a plan that would harm them. And so some of that is outside of the scope. The turnaround agenda, for example, talks about redistricting and setting term limits. Those clearly aren't directly tied to unions, but they are measures that Democrats say are designed to take away their control and their power. Would you have a Republican governor calling for term limits had there been a Republican Speaker of the House that had set records for how long he was in? Or if Republicans had been able to draw the current map that legislators run under? So there's that. Then when it comes to the labor side, so for example, look at there's also he wants changes to basically what's known as the tort system and making that more business friendly. So not, again, direct unions, but of course, unions represent workers, and workers believe that this would be to the advantage of people who own businesses to management, and it would the changes that Rauner is seeking would lead to their injured workers getting less benefits. And you even have had Democrats say, you know, lead people to have to go to the hospital and such. Then you look at property taxes. That's another one that Rauner wants, a freeze on property taxes. And again, there's bipartisan support, particularly when you look to the Chicago suburbs for that. But it's not that the governor is leaving it there. He's added on to it. He says freedom for local governments, municipalities. He also wants this for school districts to be able to negotiate with freedom in their negotiations with labor unions, and basically taking a whole lot off the table when it comes to collective bargaining. Unions say that it hurt us because what's the point of collective bargaining if we can't bargain on wages, on retirement benefits, on hours of work, on health care? Those are kind of the primary things that you want to bargain over.
Yeah, so a lot more of the details, right, Amanda?
Yeah,
that's really helpful. So that's Amanda Vinicky. She's IPR State House Bureau Chief. I want to bring someone else into the conversation as well. Joining us from Chicago, David Merriman is with UIC. He's a public policy professor and economist. He's also with the U of I's Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and this week put out a report looking at the budget. David, welcome.
Hi, thanks. Nice to be here.
We're asking people to tweet questions if they have them. They can use the hashtag AskIPR. They can give us a call at 1-800-222-9455 if they have questions. And David, as Amanda's talking about, sort of as we're laying out kind of the basics of this, one question I wanted to ask you is, financially, how did we end up in this situation?
Well, this is the process of having such an unbalanced budget has been something that's been going on for many, many years. One big contributor to it was back about 15 or 20 years ago, the legislature enacted what they call a pension ramp, a system of paying for the state workers' pension, which gradually increased the amount that the state was paying into the system. And so that ramp is now ramped up, and that's partly why, a good part of the reason why the pension expenditures are going up. In addition to that, the state used to be a relatively low-tax state, but it was not a low-spending state. So on many kind of public services, we spend quite a bit, but we weren't taxing sufficiently. So that basically is the history of why we're in this difficulty now.
And Amanda, maybe you can also explain for folks the pension, the personal income tax, and how that's kind of changed in the past year. Amanda, can you explain that?
Well, yeah, sure. So basically, you had Governor Bruce Rauner campaign. He said he wanted the tax rate to roll back. In 2011, legislators passed a temporary increase. We're still seeing a bit of that now, but the bulk of it actually went away in the latter half of the last fiscal year. This is the first fiscal year that completely leaves behind about $4 billion. And so you're seeing Illinois spending at that rate because of a whole lot of consent decrees and a couple of laws that the legislature and the governor agreed on to spend money during this impasse. So they're spending at a rate of when they had this extra tax money coming into the state. But that bulk of that tax hike from 2011 has gone away.
Amanda, here's another question that we've gotten. How is it legal for the legislature and executive office to leave us without a budget for this long?
Well, it's designed so that it shouldn't be that way. I mean, they right. have there are certain mechanisms that are part of state law. So, for example, if the legislature doesn't and the governor together, there's joint responsibility, of course, don't have a budget by the end of June before the fiscal year is to take effect July 1st, then it takes an increased number of votes to pass anything and it would take effect immediately. So that's where you see these supermajorities coming into question. We've gone on so long. I'm not sure anybody that when they wrote the Constitution could have imagined this, that supermajority has now dropped and now that we are in 2016. So that has gone away. The Constitution does say that the governor is asked to, and that's what we'll be hearing him do today, present a budget that has to be balanced, that it's supposed to be true to the estimated revenue and spending. But estimate is a word that is actually in the Constitution there, and that is one that I think politicians throughout the ages in Illinois have used quite liberally.
That's Amanda Vinicky. She's IPR State House Bureau Chief. David Merriman is on the line with us as well. He's an economist at UIC. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and you're listening to an Illinois Public Radio special ahead of the governor's budget address. We've been talking to folks on social media for the past week or so on Facebook and Twitter and Reddit, and you can join the conversation now, too, if you use the hashtag AskIPR, or you can give us a call as well. Our number is 1-800-222-9455. And Amanda, let me ask you another question that we got. Actually, I think this question was from Reddit. What teeth exists in the law to structurally prevent something like this from happening next time? Is there anything?
Well, like I said, it's that supermajority vote is there, and the Constitution, as I said, check out Article 8 if you want to give it a read. That is the finance.
I know you've read that a lot, Amanda.
Article 9. Yeah, I don't have it memorized, but I know it pretty well. That you have the Revenue Act. So it's what's really difficult here, and I think changes the dynamic is that you have all of these court decisions that have led to state employees getting paid, to social services, Medicaid payments continuing to go out. So really, in many ways, a lot of the pressure points have been lifted. And so when typically you would think, I mean, the appropriations need to, there needs to be appropriation authority. The legislature needs to pass a bill. The governor needs to sign it into law in order for money to be spent. Instead, we have the judicial branch that has really come in and flipped that dynamic on its face. So you're having all sorts of spending without actual appropriations. And that's something that the Constitution hasn't really directly dealt with or imagined. And that's where you hear Governor Bruce Rauner talking about perhaps wanting to change all of these consent decrees. That said, he has agreed to more of them in court. I don't know what the long-term effects of this will be, but I do remember back in the summer asking Attorney General Lisa Madigan about that, and she said, yeah, this isn't a direct quote, but this is crazy, that she was surprised that a judge had ruled that employee paychecks could still keep going without any spending authority, because that's not typically how it's supposed to work.
And we're going to get into those specifics with David in a few minutes. Amanda, I know you're going to have to head upstairs to actually hear the budget address. So before I let you go and give you time to get up there, I wanted to ask you just one last question. We just have about a minute or two before we take a break. What's the mood in the State House today? Have you talked to lawmakers about what they're expecting? What's going on?
I think in some ways it is pretty humdrum, because the expectation is that Governor Bruce Rauner is not going to give up on that turnaround we talked about at the top of the program here, and Democrats aren't willing to give in. So no matter what he says, that isn't going to change, and that makes this all so difficult. Then, of course, there is a huge element of curiosity. The governor is in a tight spot with this, obviously giving a budget address when you're 8 months into the current year without any sort of spending plan. So that is a particular place for him to be in. We've already heard that he's going to propose money for schools and put that as his top priority. That's another element that has taken the pressure off this time around. So you're adding in a new political dynamic right there, and advocates already saying, we don't like that. Yes, schools are important, but so is everything else. And Illinois needs to hurry up and recognize that.
Amanda, I imagine also that there's quite a few different special interest groups on budget day. Normally the state house is full of, the Capitol is full of different groups coming to lobby. Is today any different?
Nope. We've got those groups lobbying. A lot of the female legislators are wearing red. It's Go Red for Women Month. And then we have a lot of college students, particularly Eastern Illinois University, where there have just been some nearly 200 layoffs. They have students here calling for the governor to sign that MAP grant funding bill. A lot of different people anxiously awaiting what exactly Rauner is going to say. Will he get in any specifics about cuts or revenue? And they're here and in brightly colored t-shirts and holding up posters, ready to listen.
That's IPR State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky giving us a sense of the scene of what's going on in Springfield. Amanda, we'll let you go. We know you need to get upstairs and get ready to cover that. We'll look forward to talking to you later in the day and hearing your stories and all things considered. That's Amanda Vinicky. Amanda, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Nyla. Thanks, everyone else.
All of those things that Amanda talked about, those court orders, those consent decrees, as well as universities, including Northern Illinois University, we're going to be speaking with some of those folks coming up later on in the program. And we're going to get to more of your questions in 2 minutes as well about the state budget, who's affected by the standoff, and what might happen next. David Merriman is going to continue to be with us from the Fiscal Futures Project. And stay with us. You're listening to Illinois Public Radio. Hi, I'm Nyla Boodoo, and this is an Illinois Public Radio special ahead of the governor's budget address.
In September of 2015, I was laid off from a university here in Illinois, and by the grace of God, I was rehired at a different location in January of this year. And it has been awful. It is not easy to live on unemployment. What I'm hoping for at this point is somebody will lock all of these children in a room together so that they can figure out what this budget mess is going to do. You've reached a point of no return, and you're going to have to come to some kind of a compromise because this isn't working anymore. What do you expect us to do?
That was Connie Clarkson at Eastern Illinois University's Continuing Education Office at Parkland College. She says after being laid off, she does not have much hope for Governor Rauner's budget address. All this hour, we're answering your questions about the budget impasse. You can join us. Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet your questions using the hashtag AskIPR. My guest with me on the line with us from Chicago, David Merriman, is a UIC public policy professor and economist. He's also with the Fiscal Futures Project and has been this week delving really deeply into the situation that we've got with a budget. And I wanted to, David, ask you, we've been sort of polling people on social media through Facebook and through Twitter and Reddit, questions that they have about the budget. And I actually thought we could play a question from someone that we got from Reddit.
Hi, I got a message on Reddit asking me to submit this question. My name's Michael. I live in Bloomington, Illinois. My question is, I wonder why we're still saying that the state doesn't have a budget when it seems like the vast majority of state functions, though certainly not all, are still being carried out. So I guess my question is in three parts. How much is the state currently spending and compare that to last fiscal year? How much revenue is the state currently taking in and compare that to last fiscal year? And what's the difference between saying we're spending X billion dollars and taking in Y billion dollars through a complex set of consent decrees and individual appropriations and saying we have a budget? Thanks.
Okay, so David, those were a pretty specific questions there. Maybe we should start with the first one, which is when he was asking about how much the state is currently spending right now. And maybe you can explain, Amanda started getting into this before the break, there's sort of consent decrees and court orders and continuing authorizations. What's actually being funded right now? I've seen figures of 90% of the budget kind of going through. Is that accurate?
Well, what we did is we got data directly from the Illinois Comptroller. So the Illinois Comptroller is the one that actually writes the checks to people for government spending. And we totaled that through December 31st of last year. So it's 6 months. At that time, spending had what for the year was about $27.7 billion. And this is basically spending from all funds. There's some general funds and then other funds. So this is government-wide spending. That's about 40% of the amount that was spent last year. So halfway through the year, they've done about 40% of the spending compared to the previous year.
Okay, so that's what spending looks like. What does revenue look like compared to the previous
year? So revenue is down as well, and that's, as Amanda talked about previously, revenue's down, and this is again through 6 months, because of the decline in the income tax rate, the personal income tax rate, primarily from 5 to 3.75%. There was also a corporate tax rate that went down. And it's about, we have about $30 billion of revenue through the first 6 months, which is about 46% of the revenue raised in fiscal year 15. We were able to project that for the full year. We project this year compared to FY15 with no changes in taxes, revenue will be about 3% lower than it was in the previous year, and that's about actually a little over $2 billion, right around $2 billion less. It's a 3% decline.
That's David Merriman. We're taking your questions about the budget. If you want to give us a call, you can use the number 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet your questions using the hashtag AskIPR. We've got Craig on line two from Rockford. Hey, Craig, welcome. What's your question?
Yes, good morning. David, I like the title of your project, Fiscal Futures Project. My question is, what will occur if the stalemate continues, let's say, for additional 2 or 3 months? In other words, we have a fiscal crisis right now, but at what point does this become a fiscal catastrophe?
Well, the most fundamental thing that can happen is we have a cash flow crisis. By cash flow crisis, I mean we literally do not have enough money in the bank to pay the bills. That cash flow crisis, so right now what's going on is the comptroller's not paying certain bills, in particular for employee health care, probably at least $1 billion behind. So state employees have insurance, and the comptroller hasn't been paying providers. At some point, the providers, of course, are going to stop providing services. Some have already. In addition, the comptroller is, you know, not necessarily honoring contracts for social service workers. So we're having human service workers. We're having those people laid off. The catastrophe really has already hit for a lot of people. I mean, it's hit in lots of human service agencies around the state. It's starting to hit in some universities. I guess, at what point does it become a catastrophe? I suppose it becomes a really noticeable catastrophe to people when you start having maybe large state universities that can't open.
And as we say that, David, I want to bring a couple more people into the conversation, people who are directly affected by that. In a minute, we are going to be speaking to some folks from Eastern Illinois University, as we know that in Charleston, they've had layoffs. But you mentioned bills not being paid, and I want to bring Stephanie Record in. She's the executive director of the Crisis Nursery for Champaign County, and she's here in studio with us. Stephanie, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We've heard so much about how social service agencies are being affected by this budget impasse. And we know that the Crisis Nursery last year helped 550 Champaign County families with emergency care. But one, I want to ask you about your budget. Are you still getting funding from the state for day-to-day operations?
We are. And I think a lot of our money is federal dollars that flow through the state. So those payments have been coming through for our organization.
And I said earlier you helped about 550 families last year. How many families did you have to turn away because you didn't have the space to help them?
We had to turn families away 600 times. So it wasn't necessarily 600 families, but 600 different instances where they called for help that we couldn't assist them.
And let's remind people, when they call for help, what kind of help do you all provide at the Crisis Nursery?
So we provide emergency child care for children ages birth through six when their families are experiencing a crisis, which could be homelessness, domestic violence, just any parental stress issues that are coming up. will provide care for those children.
So now you've been getting your funding from the state, I imagine, because of what we talked about originally with court orders and consent decrees and that continuing appropriations. That has to come through because that's federal money that's coming to you. But there is other money that the state owes you. Can you tell us about that?
So we had two $200,000 grants from DCEO that were awarded to the nursery, and it started back in 2009, and we received that funding in 2015. It started to come in, and we received about $115,000 of that.
And what was that funding for?
It's to expand our current facility so we can provide services to those children we were having to turn away. And so they still owe us about $285,000, and that money's been frozen because of the budget crisis.
Now, you have actually started construction then.
Correct. So we had to make a decision as to whether we would halt the project or continue the project. And the expense to halt and start up a project like this was way more detrimental to the nursery than it would have been to just continue on. So our board voted to continue on.
And how are you also? But that's a $300,000 gap for you. When you talk about $300,000, for people who don't know the size of your budget, how big of a deal is that for you all?
Well, we're a million-dollar organization, so that's a pretty large chunk of funding for us. So we've explored our different options, and if the state funding isn't reinstated and we're not able to recoup those funds that were promised to us, we will take out a mortgage and pay the difference that way.
Okay. And you are one of five of these crisis nurseries across the state. You have counterparts in Peoria and Springfield. And I imagine you also work really closely with other social service agencies. I know earlier we had a caller ask if we're in a catastrophe situation. David Merriman was talking about different mm-hmm. social service providers. How are you seeing that? You're in a unique position because you're being funded for daily operations. Now we know your capital campaign is in a little bit of trouble with this construction project that you guys have, in terms of you all having to raise the money yourself.
Correct.
But how are your other social service agencies, how is that affecting what you all do?
Well, I think anytime other social service agencies are having to lay off staff or reduce services, we see the impact of that on families. So they're not getting the services maybe that they need through Rape Crisis Center or Lutheran Social Services, and that adds to their parental stress. And then we're seeing more families call us for help as well. So all of the agencies work closely together in our community. We collaborate a lot. And when those other agencies are losing funding and suffering, you know, we see the impact of that on the families we serve.
Stephanie, what would you like to see hear from the governor today?
You know, I think what everyone would like to see is just some compromise on both sides of the aisle. I think that it's time to get to work and to get the job done and to get a budget passed. And, you know, we've all watched this go on for quite a while. And so I think compromise is where we're at now.
That's Stephanie Record. She's the executive director of the Crisis Nursery of Champaign County. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation as well. As we're talking about this lack of state funding, we have heard Eastern Illinois University come up a couple of times. And that's, of course, in Charleston. Last week, the university announced cuts of 177 civil service employees. Administrators have asked faculty to take furlough days this semester. So with the personnel actions coupled with other cuts, that's expected to come at close to covering a $49 million budget shortfall from the lack of state funds. I should note to everyone who's listening, we did reach out to EIU President David Glassman, who declined our request for an interview. Joining us now is Chairman of the Faculty Senate at EIU, Jemmy Robertson. In his role on the Faculty Senate, he's the liaison between the president and the provost and the faculty. Jemmy, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to speak with you today. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. What's the tone like in your meeting with all of these groups?
Well, it's certainly been difficult all this year, but there's growing urgency as we get later and later into the academic year without funding. So it's been particularly rough the last few weeks, especially last week with, you know, having to see the final number is 177 more of our colleagues, you know, receive layoff notices and then wait on pins and needles for the next month to see if there's any progress with this budget impasse. And if there's not, then you know, those 177 employees, their employment will essentially cease. So it's very troubling.
Jemmy, you said pins and needles. Was that an accurate depiction of what the mood is like on campus right now?
Yeah, I do feel like it has been pretty dark, but there's also some positive signs. We've had some nice rallying on campus. The Friday before last, we had a Fund EIU rally, and over 2,000 people, I believe, showed up. And so that's been heartening to see the whole campus community, faculty, students, staff, administration come together and, you know, for a common cause, which is, you know, education. So that has been heartening, but still the budgetary realities are still troubling. So it's hard to see somewhat of a reduction in the services that we're able to carry out, but we're trying to do it in a very responsible way so that the tuition dollars that students have already paid, the students will receive their education on all those courses through the spring. We're going to remain open and everything, but it's getting ever more difficult to cut corners when we've already been asked to do more and more with less and less, you know, over the past year and years before that. So it's getting more and more difficult.
And Jimmy, before I ask you also about the faculty, obviously you're a professor and we've heard a lot from students about MAP funding. What are in students who are not getting the grant funds that they need? What are you hearing from your students about how they're concerned about education?
Yeah, I think that is a very troubling thing. So I think we need to act quickly and you know, try to pass State Bill 2269 or State Bill 2043, because I find it personally very troubling to have students who, you know, have they're sort of taking that bootstrap approach. They're trying to further themselves to get an education, to you know, set goals and move on to the next level, and they've anticipated a certain amount of funding from the state and they've done their part. They've taken themselves essentially out of the active workforce at the moment to get a better education, to reach for something greater, and then, you know, monies that they were expecting to help make that possible have not been paid. So Eastern, you know, at the beginning of the year and beginning of this term was in a position to sort of float that MAP money, and so we've essentially kind of paid it forward on behalf of the students, but it leaves the university in a very difficult position because in addition to the missing $40 million of appropriation, there's an additional $9 million of MAP money that has been paid essentially on the students' behalf, but it creates just even greater stress and uncertainty for the future. So I try to reassure students in my classes that, you know, they're Panthers now. They're going to be able to graduate Panthers, and you know, this is a time for them to be active and to use their voice and speak out for what they believe in, you know, whatever that may be, but to speak out on behalf of higher education and higher education funding. So even though I teach in the music discipline, it's an opportunity kind of for a civics lesson. So it's been heartening to see students get really engaged. In fact, I've rescheduled a bunch of my teaching today because students came to me and requested that they really wanted to attend this rally in Champaign. Is there a way to make that work? Okay, you know, we'll reschedule it. We'll find another time. So it's been heartening to see them get involved.
So, Jimmy, would you say that you sound somewhat optimistic about the situation? Do you think is that a fair characterization, or how are you feeling about everything now in your role as chairman of the Faculty Senate and, as you said, as a member of the music faculty and all the interactions you've had with students? What do you think the future holds?
Well, hopefully that's my disposition, is to be positive, but it is growing harder and harder to sort of maintain that stance, because we've reached the point where we very quickly and expediently do need the state appropriation that we've anticipated. So, you know, Eastern positioned itself to be in a very healthy state financially this year through some, you know, very tough cuts of faculty last summer and other civil service positions last fall. So we positioned ourselves very well. We were being very good stewards with the funding that we were anticipating. However, to be, you know, $49 million, essentially half of our anticipated monies for the entire year short.
Yeah, that's a really tough position to be in. Thanks for joining us. That's Jimmy Robertson, chair of the Faculty Senate at EIU. I want to thank also David Merriman with UIC and Stephanie Record with the Crisis Nursery. When we come back, we're going to continue our special about the budget. You're listening to an IPR special leading up to the governor's budget address at noon. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and we're going to shift now from the stories of those affected by the budget standoff to the politics that are playing out in Springfield.
I don't understand why either of the parties doesn't want to find an agreeable solution to get things working. I don't understand who's gaining what from this particular dilemma.
I'm a hero daughter who goes to child care, and the providers need to get paid. If they don't get paid, I don't go to work. And if I don't go to work, we don't have no place to stay. So they need to hurry up and fix the budgets real quick, quit playing around.
What is it going to take? How many hundreds of thousands of people will have to leave this great state for the Republicans and the Democrats to come to some kind of consensus? But enough is enough now. You know, it's time. The question is, who's going to bend so that we can move forward?
That's a collection of voices from around the state and a sample of the frustration being directed at both parties in Springfield. We've been taking your calls and tweets. I want to read a comment that Micah just had on Twitter using the hashtag AskIPR. If I could ask a question to Illinois politicians, I would ask them if they are simply embarrassed to be an Illinois politician. We're about 10 minutes away from Governor Rauner presenting his 2017 budget, so we thought we'd use these next few minutes to talk about what comes next. I want to bring on our final guest for this hour, Kent Redfield, spent decades working in Springfield inside the State House and out of it. He taught political science at the U of I Springfield campus for many years and joins us on the line now from Springfield. Kent, welcome.
Good to be here.
And we have a caller that I wanted to go to right away, too, if we could. Let's hear from Paul in Urbana on line one. He's got a question. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I've been following it for a while, and I think the Eikenberry Commission, that Governor Edgar had it right, the tax swap. They're talking about the onerous property tax. Why don't we do the tax increase? Property tax decrease that it seems that a supermajority, maybe even including a couple of Republicans, could agree on this. But I don't even hear it in the discourse. I don't hear anything about the Eikenberry Commission from some years ago. So.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Paul. Kent, with all the other things we've heard on the table, we haven't heard very much about that.
Well, and they're, you know, they're two separate issues. You know, we should decrease the how much we rely on property taxes to fund local schools and increase the amount of state support that would allow us to get more equity and to actually change the formula. But, you know, that's, if that's basically revenue neutral, then you haven't addressed the budget crisis. You know, we are going to be $9 billion in the hole at the end of this fiscal year with or without a budget. And if you project this year's spending and this year's revenue, you know, just kind of into the next fiscal year, we'll add another $5 billion in the hole, you know, to the unpaid bills. And so, you know, we really need to address the fact that the normal operations of state government and the amount of revenue we take in don't even come close to matching up. And then you put on top of that the fact that the governor, you know, I mean, just yesterday said, you know, he was saying it's hard to give a budget speech when you don't have a budget. But then he said, you know what, it's not really about the budget. It's about the future direction of Illinois. And so we can't even get to these really, really tough discussions about the politics of fixing the budget until we get an agreement on the turnaround agenda. So that's a worthy thing to go after, trying to make more sense, you know, get a better way to fund schools. But we've got some really, really difficult hurdles to get pass before we can have that conversation.
And Kent, we have been talking about the fiscal situation and the revenue situation, and I wanted to shift to the politics of the situation because that's kind of where we're at now. In these next few minutes we have for maybe folks who are just tuning in right now, you're listening to Illinois Public Radio, a special about the budget address. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and I'm talking to Kent Redfield about what we can expect from Governor Rauner. Kent, last year, I recall you and I talking about, the same day last year, how odd a situation we were in last year at this time. And I'm curious, given your perspective on Illinois politics, how you would characterize what we're facing this year.
We've gone from unprecedented to I really don't even have a word to describe the situation we're in. We have no idea what this year's budget looks like, and it makes it very difficult to get next year's budget. And rather than get a comprehensive budget, you know, essentially the governor is going to say, well, let's all agree that we should fund elementary and secondary education. Let's take that off the table, and then we can start talking about these other things. And by the way, if you don't want to give me my turnaround agenda, why don't you just let me make all of the budget decisions? So he's kind of got door number one and door number two.
Right, we've kind of heard that's a possibility of what may be coming out today. And let's talk about, we've spent a lot of time talking about the governor. I'd like to talk about House Speaker Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton. What is the likelihood that we have any movement among the Democratic side of lawmakers towards anything that the governor is trying to address?
I don't think there's any reason for them to move at this point until they see if the governor will back off on some of his demands in terms of the turnaround agenda. And you know, frankly, we've run out of time as far as getting any revenue fixes for this year, for the budget that ends in June. And it's quite likely the politics of tax increases we won't get to. Even if we could agree we need more revenue, that vote won't come until after the elections, meaning that we'll probably only have a half years of new revenue if we ever get to that point. So, you know, if the Democrats can probably just sit where they're at because we are about in the same point now as we would have been if the governor had signed the Democrats' budget that was $4 billion out of balance. So at some point this will all implode, but right now, we're going to crash this public university or something else before we get to the point of this happening. So I really don't see that the Democrats are going to be in any hurry to respond to what the governor wants to do. Both sides think that eventually the things are going to get bad enough that the other side will give.
And I guess that's the question, Kent, right? Because all this hour we've been hearing from social service providers, from public universities, layoffs, cuts. And I think this is the question that everyone is curious about, is how much worse can it get?
Well, and frankly, if we could get to the point where we're just not going to fund higher education or MAP grants for this year, there is no revenue to do that. We don't have enough revenue to do that. The governor is talking about vetoing the MAP bill because there's not enough revenue. Well, there's not enough revenue in the next budget for increases in elementary and secondary. We're just running the credit card, and I guess we can continue to run the credit card. 3 years from now, we'll have $25 billion in unpaid bills if we keep going. So,
and we haven't even started the pension discussion yet.
Right. This will collapse at some point, but, what would be the trigger? Closing a university, some kind of very public death or series of deaths that we attribute to the lack of social services. Does somebody have to die? Do we have to close a university? It's not clear. All of the leverage up to this point hasn't gotten any movement. And so, unless we get a very reduced set of demands from the governor and some more, some willingness to really cut budgets on the part of the Democrats, it's not clear how we get out of this.
Do you see political fallout from this?
Oh, I think it would be, if this goes on to November, I think it will be very, being an incumbent is usually an advantage. I think it will be a significant disadvantage. It will, both sides are betting that the other side's incumbents are going to, suffer more damage than their incumbents. But I'm not sure being an incumbent state representative or state senator up for election in November is going to be a very enjoyable task.
Kent, I wanted to ask you, before we get to what you think the governor is going to say, I'm going to start by asking, what do you think the governor needs to say?
Well, I think he needs to be very specific about what he does and doesn't want. What's the bottom line on his turnaround agenda? And then you need to be honest about where the state budget is. If you read the Civic Federation's analysis of how we get back to zero, we're talking about $4 billion worth of tax cuts and tax increases and budget cuts, and another $4 billion of at least, you know, temporary revenue to pay off our unpaid bills over 3 years. You know, we have to be honest about the fact that we're, you know, what we say we need to do as a state and how much money we have coming in don't match up. And if we can't have an honest discussion about what we need to do and how we're going to pay for it, then we're just going to either, you know, keep running the credit card or keep letting people suffer. So, you know, we need to level with the public about what the budget situation is, and we need to level with the public about, you know, where's the common ground. You know, we need a better business climate, absolutely no question. But, you know, do we need to eviscerate public employee unions and harm trade unions to do that? I'm not sure you're going to ever get a majority out of the General Assembly to do that.
Kent, now that you've said what we need to hear, I'm curious your thoughts as to what you think the governor will actually say. And I ask that thinking of back to the State of the State address a few weeks ago, and the fact that if you just listen to that State of the State address, maybe you wouldn't be aware of the situation we were in because the budget was barely mentioned. So I wonder if you think, given that precedent, given what we saw last year from the governor, what do you think he's actually going to say today? Do you think there's going to be that acknowledgement, that reality?
No. I think that we're going to talk about, you know, yes, we have a terrible situation, and you know, you can just give me the authority to make all of these cuts, which the legislature probably will not do, or you know, if we you give me the turnaround agenda, then we can sit down and you know reason this out. But reasoning it out means, you know, how do you get Democrats to vote for budget cuts and Republicans to vote for tax increase? How do you sell the bitter medicine that, you know, we need $4 billion to get to even in cuts in taxes and maybe $8 billion to pay off debt if we're trying to get to the point where the bond houses, you know, the credit agencies would say, you know, you've got a stable, sustainable budget situation. And so, you know, to just pretend that we can all come together in an era of good feeling as long as we agree on the economic agenda is not being truthful. And I don't think, you know, anyone believes that there'll be much left as far as social services or higher education if we continue, you know, or the state's credit rating if we continue running the, you know, the credit card.
Ken, I mean, how important do you think the tone is of this speech? I think we saw Governor Rauner trying to certainly making an effort to sound more respectful in the State of the State address. Will that make a difference?
It will make a difference in a little bit in public perception, but if that does not translate into trust and communication, and there's very little on either side, you know, and so it's about deeds at this point. You know, trying to mousetrap the Democrats into funding elementary and secondary education and saying, you know, you can't have this hostage, but I can have my hostage, you know, the social service budgets, that's not going to get us to trust and respect and communication. So, you know, the words matter, but the deeds will matter more. You know, are we going to sit down and have some agreements about, you know, the tough decisions? And we have been far too, as a state, you know, we've been far too willing to put those off.
And, Kent, real quick question for you, just as we wrap up here. Can you give me a month's time frame of when you think this will be resolved? Do you see this resolved before November?
No. I think that's highly unlikely that we're going to get any, you know, and I don't think the elections will solve anything.
Thanks for that. That's Kent Redfield. He's an emeritus professor of political science at the University of Illinois at Springfield. He also directs the Sunshine Project, a campaign finance research project funded by the Joyce Foundation. Thanks very much for joining us, Kent. I want to thank everyone else who also sent us messages on Reddit, Twitter, and Facebook, and those who called in with your questions. Unfortunately, we didn't have time to respond to all of them, but there's still a conversation going on Twitter. Use the hashtag AskIPR. In 2 minutes, we'll be bringing you live coverage of Governor Rauner's budget address from the State House in Springfield, so stay tuned for that. Thanks for joining us. I'm Nyla Boodoo. You've been listening to an Illinois Public Radio special.